Saturday week back, Silvio said to me, "Have you ever heard of the Angel of Mons being the repository of all knowledge?" I said, "Yes, I've heard of it, but I didn't know the finer details." And please note that I said I was the repository of all knowledge, unlike Tony Abbott, who once declared that he was the suppository of all knowledge. So with my vast computer skills, I managed to look it up. Briefly, it goes like this. The British Army retreating from the Germans at Mons in France on the 26th of August 1914. Greatly outnumbered, at around 9 p.m. on a fine evening, three golden figures appeared in the sky. One huge figure with wings, two lesser figures, one each side. Their faces couldn't be discerned, and under the feet of each of the three was a huge star. The Reverend A.A. Boddy, Vicar of All Saints, Sunderland, was serving as chaplain at the time. So with a name like Boddy, you can believe it. They're not here this morning to appreciate this joke. But he followed up after the war ended and found that there was much discussion in Berlin. The Germans had failed to carry out orders. When censured, they declared that they did go forward, but found themselves absolutely powerless to proceed, and their horses turned sharply around and fled like the wind, and nothing could stop them. I had been wondering what I might preach on this morning. I know I've preached on all of those texts over the years, but I thought I hadn't heard too many sermons on angels, and maybe you haven't either, so I'm going to fix that. And my pretext this morning is the word angel mentioned in that second reading read by Bob. One of my fellow students preached on angels, and he went around the church at St. John's Reed pointing out the little one in that stained glass window and the little one in that stained glass window, then the one in the window partially hidden by the choir gallery, and then he spoke about angels. Later in the morning, we went back to college for what was known as sermon critique. This was where they tore you to pieces for suspect theology, good theology, for telling jokes, for not telling jokes, for having a scowl on your face as you spoke about the love of God, and for smiling when talking about sin and Satan, for being nervous or for being overly confident. When we started to critique Paul's sermon, I said, "Don't you like big angels?" Because in the 20 he'd found, little ones, he'd missed this huge 7 or 8 foot one in the main central windows at the front. What do you think about angels? Do you believe in them as a reality, or are they just tooth fairy? What do angels do? Angels are the messengers of God, although some work for the opposite team. Let's look at the scriptures, because as Dr. Billy Graham says, our frame of reference must always be the scriptures as our supreme authority on all subjects. So look at the Old Testament first. Notice that angels aren't mentioned anywhere in the 6 days of creation. It's probable that God created the angels before the creation of the heavens and the earth in Genesis 1. We're also given a clue in the book of Job, chapter 38, verses 4 through to 7. And this whole chapter is the Lord's answer to Job when he asks, "Where was Job at the formation of the earth?" And it reads like this: "Where were you when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me if you understand. Who marked the dimensions? Surely you know. Who set out the footings? Or who laid the cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and the angels shouted for joy?" So the angels obviously were there at the creation of the earth. So the Bible doesn't tell us this outright, but perhaps it's assumed by the appearance of Satan in the Garden of Eden. Who is this evil being, and how did he get here? When did he fall out of God's favour? So we mightn't know the details of how and when, but we're told in Revelations chapter 12, verses 7 to 9, "And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth and his angels with him. So now we see that there are God's angels and Satan's angels. Angels are spiritual beings separate from God, and unless they are fallen, are of unquestioned integrity, goodwill, and obedience to him. Angels appear to us as bearers of God's specific commands and tidings, and are mentioned 13 times in the Old Testament and 29 times in the New Testament. We seem only to have the names of five: Gabriel, Michael, Raphael, and Uriel, and Abaddon, who is the angel of the bottomless pit, mentioned only once in Revelations chapter 9. Gabriel seems to stand in a place of great honour. It was he who interpreted Daniel's vision of the ram and the goat in Daniel chapter 8. It was he who announced the birth of John the Baptist to his parents, Zechariah and Elizabeth, in Luke 11. And it was Gabriel who announced the coming birth of Jesus to Mary. In all instances, he was received with feelings ranging from absolute terror to Mary being a little afraid, always seen as a messenger of God. Michael, the archangel, portrayed in Jude chapter 9 as protector of Israel, again in Daniel 10 and Daniel 12. Angels were at work all through the scriptures. Remember also that Balaam's donkey was more aware of the presence of the angel of the Lord than Balaam himself was. When three men appeared to Abraham to announce the birth of Isaac, two of those men were angels, as we are told in the next chapter. Those people who talk about personal guardian angels may not be too theologically unsound, because as we look in the New Testament, we see this concept sharpened. From Matthew 18, when Jesus was asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" set a little child in their midst, and at the end of his reply said, "See that you do not look down on one of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven." Remember when Peter escaped from prison in Acts 12, he went to John's mother's house, knocked on the door, and the servant girl answered the door, like, "Hello, knocking door," shut it in his face and left him standing there, told the other disciples, who told her she was out of her mind. When she kept insisting that it was Peter, they said, "It must be his angel." The ancient mind seemed able to accept the reality of angels. Little seems to be attempted by way of direct description of the angelic form. There are hints of lustrous countenance and apparel, of awesome otherworldly beauty, which is why Sylvia calls me her angel. Christian art has attempted to express in its own way. We do have one description from Matthew chapter 28, verse 2 following, after the resurrection. "There was a violent earthquake, and an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were as white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men." So the passage speaks of the reality of angels, gives his appearance, and that it gave the guards something to think about for the following week. Jesus himself received ministry from angels on several occasions, after the temptation of Jesus in the desert. In Matthew 4, we are told, "Then the devil left him, and angels came and attended him." Jesus, when praying on the Mount of Olives just before his arrest, with his spirit in great anguish, an angel from heaven ministered to him and strengthened him. On the night Jesus was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, one of Jesus' companions cut the ear off one of the servants of the high priest. And Jesus said to him, "Put your sword back in its place, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" Numerically, a legion was a division of Roman soldiers comprising between 4,000 and 6,000 men. So 12 legions of angels was a lot of angels that he could have summoned. There seems no doubt in Scripture as to the reality of angels. Jesus himself believed in them, and many people, through extraordinary circumstances, have been ministered to by angels. I end with three true modern stories. Sylvia and I entertained an Anglican Franciscan priest one night. If any of you were watchers of cricket on TV some years ago, you might recall a little umpire with a limp because one leg was shorter than the other. And this is true, no cricketing pun intended about short leg off and all that sort of thing. He used to umpire the international tests. He was telling us one night that over in the Solomon Islands, he was out for dinner in an enormous mansion, and the subject of angels came up. He said that he didn't believe in angels. At precisely that moment, a large, heavy chandelier came crashing down in the middle of the table. He said that the chandelier had been there for over 100 years, and on examination, there appeared nothing wrong with the chains, woodwork, or wiring. He felt he should hurry home and rethink his theology on angels. Second, Gladys Aylward, who wrote the book The Little Woman, was on overseas missionary work from England. She was out between two towns in China and had to camp out overnight. They had valuables with them, and it was known that where they were camping was infested with robbers. The night passed uneventfully, and they moved on to their hospital town the next day. A little while later, the leader of the robbers came into the hospital with a broken leg. While he was in hospital, he said to the missionary Gladys that he'd seen her before, the night she'd camped out. He said that his band of robbers had watched them all night, but didn't rob them because of the seven soldiers guarding them all night. When she returned on leave to England, she went to her parish and related the story. The parish prayer meeting on the night that she was camping out worked out that there were seven people attending that night and all were praying for her. Angels? The rector of Neutral Bay some years ago told me this of his time as rector of Glebe Parish in Sydney. One night he was getting changed into his jammies when there was a knock on the door. When he answered it, there was a little girl standing there who simply said, "Come with me, my mother's dying." So Alan grabbed his home communion set, prayer book, and followed her down the road, round a few corners along a street, till the girl stopped and said, "She's in there," and disappeared. Alan went in, and in the front room there was a very, very sick lady in bed. They talked for a while, and the lady said, "How did you know to come?" He said, "Your daughter came and got me." She said, "Would you go into the next room and get the photo that's on the mantelpiece?" So he went and got the photo and brought it back to her, and she asked, "Is that the girl?" He said, "Yes." The sick lady said, "My daughter has been dead for 10 years. Daughter's spirit? Angel? You tell me.